to the People and Projects podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence and Development Incorporated. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects podcast. I happen to be out in Las Vegas this week, speaking to leaders from hundreds of companies from around the world, and Las Vegas is certainly an intriguing place on many levels. And let's face it, it's an economy that thrives on tourism, and in order to keep those tourists happy and coming back, organizations out here need reliable, skilled, engaged workers. You know, the truth is, the need for engaged, motivated employees, it's not just a Las Vegas issue. I've often felt that the most dangerous person in a company is not the person who leaves the company. It's the person who's left the company but hasn't left the company. You know what I mean? It's that person who just keeps checking in and checking out day after day, taking up space, leaving a huge amount of productivity on the table. Well, whether you lead a team of software developers or salespeople or accountants or doctors, much of our organizational success comes down to how engaged and motivated our frontline employees truly are. Now, I'm staying at a really nice, well-known hotel in Vegas, and to be honest, I'm really not all that impressed with frontline service. And you know what? I intersect with enough companies to recognize this isn't just an issue at Caesar's Palace. Chances are your organization could use some insights on how to further engage your employees as well. Well, in recent years, I've enjoyed following the employee engagement research and writings of Dr. Adam Grant from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. I had the opportunity to catch up with Adam recently and look forward to sharing that interview with you now. I'm joined today by Dr. Adam Grant, Associate Professor of Management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Adam's research focuses on work motivation with an emphasis on when and how making a difference makes a difference. His articles have been published in a wide range of leading management and psychology journals, and his studies have been covered by outlets such as USA Today, US News and World Report, The Wall Street Journal, and CNN. Adam, thank you for joining us today for the People and Projects podcast.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
You know, I know from a previous conversation, both of us share a slide in some of the work that we do that talks about the difference between what employees say they want and what their managers think employees want. And interestingly, the managers tend to mistakenly value extrinsic factors such as compensation and job security, where employees want more intrinsic factors such as full appreciation for work done and feeling in on things. So, you know, Adam, I'm interested, what does your research tell us about the effectiveness of intrinsic and extrinsic motivation? And have you observed this same gap between what management thinks is important and what workers truly value?
So it's a very interesting question, and apologies in advance for sounding like a social scientist, but of course the answer is it depends.
Nice.
Needless to say, there are many ways in which extrinsic rewards, pay, promotions, challenges can be motivating. Yeah. Certainly a lot of ways that intrinsic rewards, interesting work, opportunities to learn and grow can also be motivating.
Yeah.
And there's certainly plenty of evidence that managers often overestimate the importance of extrinsic relative to intrinsic rewards.
Okay.
And I think the best data on this come from Chip Heath at Stanford, who's actually shown among managers a fairly persistent extrinsic incentives and rewards bias, where managers consistently emphasize and believe in the power of extrinsic rewards over intrinsic rewards. More so than employees do, and more so than employees' behavioral responses typically show.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's also a view, Sarah Ryans and her colleagues at Iowa have some evidence suggesting that there's a discrepancy between what employees say and what they do, and that employees would like to believe that intrinsic rewards are very important, but in fact, their behavior shows dramatic responses to extrinsic rewards. And so I think this is a very complicated picture.
Yeah.
The way that I tend to look at this is, of course, to recognize that both extrinsic and intrinsic rewards are important.
Yeah.
And what I'm most interested in, of course, is understanding the intrinsic factors that affect motivation, in part because they're often under greater control by managers.
Yeah.
And part because they can be offered to all employees as opposed to requiring competitions or forced rankings to dole them out.
Sure, that makes sense.
And in part because I think these rewards have the potential in some cases to transform a job into a calling.
Yeah, that's a great way of saying it, Adam. Yeah.
And thanks, I've been practicing.
That's the name of a book, man. That's your next book.
Yeah, so I think, I think it is.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I often hear leaders say something like, you know, I need more staff, you know, I could do better if I had more staff. But the economy that we're not only in now, but likely to struggle with for a while, it seems to have squeezed hope for a headcount for many organizations anyway. You know, sometimes more people, that's the answer. But is it fair to say, you know, Adam, we've got some productivity that's currently being left on the table with employees who just aren't as engaged as they could, you know, unwilling to go the mile, let alone the extra mile, so to speak?
I think that's a fair assumption. I've always looked at engagement, you know, falling on a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in a typical organization, it would be very rare to find that every single employee is as engaged at work as he or she possibly could be.
Absolutely.
Another way to say that is to say that there are, of course, fluctuations in everyone's engagement. I know there are days when I walk into the office and I'm incredibly focused and motivated and driven.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other days when, you know, I don't quite show that same level of engagement.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very fair assumption. And, of course, one of the questions that I find quite interesting is how do we actually create strategies to engage employees more effectively?
Yeah. Well, do you have any favorite particular strategies related to that?
Sure. So one of my favorite strategies falls into the broad category of what I might call leading with meaning.
Mm.
And the idea that one of the fundamental tasks that a leader's one of the fundamental responsibilities of a leader, and also one of the fundamental opportunities for a leader, is to think about ways to make work more meaningful for employees.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that we often overlook as we face a lot of time pressure. And as we're focused on our own tasks and responsibilities as leaders and managers.
Yeah.
And in the past few years, I've studied a number of different ways that leaders and managers can go about helping to make work more meaningful for employees.
Yeah.
And one of the most powerful steps turns out to be identifying who are those end users, whether it's clients or customers or patients, who benefit from employees' work.
Mm-hmm.
And establishing a strong face-to-face connection between employees and those end users.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example of that, one of the series of studies that I've been working on over the past decade or so is taking university fundraisers who contact alums and try to convince them to donate money.
Right.
And helping them really understand how their work is meaningful because it makes a difference in funding scholarships for students to attend college.
Right.
And in one of these studies, I think the most powerful example, I brought in a single scholarship student to talk with the callers about how the money that they raised essentially made his scholarship possible and changed his life.
Yeah.
And was quite surprised to find that the callers, on average, spent 3 times as much time on the phone as they had before meeting the scholarship student. They more than doubled the number of calls that they made per hour. And they showed average weekly increases of over 500% in revenue raised.
Wow.
And you know, we could think about this as obvious in the sense that we all know that making work meaningful is important. And we all know that employees can be motivated and inspired by seeing how their actions make a difference.
Right, right.
But I personally underestimated just how powerful that experience could be. And, and certainly many of the leaders and managers and executives that I work with tend to do the same. And I wouldn't have expected that a single 5-minute interaction with one person who benefits from your work could produce such dramatic increases in your performance and productivity.
It's really interesting, Adam, because in this case, if I caught you right, it's not just conceptually how it benefits at someone, but you're talking even face-to-face. Like in those examples, was it a face-to-face with that student?
That's right. And so we've done versions of this experiment where you get to read a thank you letter from the student.
Right.
Versus the student actually comes in and talks to you face to face.
Yeah.
And we do get significant increases in motivation, performance, productivity when the letter from the student comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But as you anticipated, that face to face connection is most powerful. It's when I see that customer or client face to face that I can identify with that person, I can empathize, and I can really realize in a vivid way that my actions make a difference for living, breathing human beings. And not surprisingly, the effects are much stronger when we can really connect our actions to that awareness of how we concretely benefit others.
Yeah, man, that's really interesting. Actually, where I first learned about your work was an article by Noah Goldstein, Influence One, where he talked about your difference between task significance and personal benefit. And I think this kind of ties in, doesn't it, of those two. And so how would you describe the difference between task significance and personal benefit when it comes to trying to gain support from people?
It's a very interesting question. So the basic idea, and this goes back to a lot of classic research, is that we could think about highlighting the benefits of your job in two different ways.
Yeah.
One is to think about how your job benefits you personally,
mm-hmm.
and the other is to think about how your job benefits others. And again, going back to your original question about extrinsic and intrinsic rewards and incentives, many leaders and managers tend to focus primarily on designing jobs that are personally beneficial.
Sure.
And so, you know, if I were a leader or a manager and I were working with you, Andy, the first question I might ask you is, okay, you know, what are your personal goals and interests, and how can I design your job and reward you in a way that meets those goals and interests?
Right.
And certainly, again, that can be motivating and that can be effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in many cases, managers do a fairly solid job of that. What I find especially fascinating and what I think is important for all of us to understand more carefully is to gain a deeper appreciation of the idea that it's also important to many employees that their job benefits others.
Right.
And in order to understand how we can motivate people effectively, one thing I will struggle to do as a leader or a manager is to really help you, Andy, see how your job is personally beneficial, because you're already an expert on that.
Right.
You already know how your job does good for you,
mm-hmm.
Because you experience that on a daily basis.
Right, exactly.
It's much more common that you would be in the dark or not fully informed about how your job benefits others.
I really think that's true, yeah.
And I think that happens for a lot of reasons. You know, one is that there are often many different levels and stages between employees and their end users. So I might be working on a product or service that goes through several suppliers or assembly lines or halfway across the globe before it reaches the people who actually benefit from it.
Right.
You know, certainly another reason is that we don't always receive feedback from those people, even when we do have contact with them.
That's a good point.
We don't always know directly from our clients or our customers or our patients exactly how our work is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that my research has shown is that it can be even more powerful because it's more novel information and because it does make your work more meaningful to see how your actions or your job actually benefit others.
Yeah, that is so good. And if there's a way to even get you face-to-face with those people that you've benefited, it's even more powerful. Yeah, that is helpful.
That's right. And as a follow-up on that, one of the recent extensions of this work has been to look at the idea that as a leader, I often think that it's my responsibility to inspire employees.
Right.
And what's very powerful here is that Dave Hoffman and I have shown recently that leaders can actually use our findings to think about outsourcing inspiration.
Well, as somebody who might be in that industry, I need to know more about this.
So, you know, I think there are times when, you know, we want to deliver an upbeat speech.
Right.
We want to help motivate our employees, help engage them around how their work is important and meaningful.
Right.
And there are certainly ways in which leaders can deliver those messages effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also times when the leader might not be the ideal source of that information.
Hmm.
And it might be the case that you could find that client or customer or patient who's been affected by the work in a very significant and meaningful way.
Absolutely.
And that person might be the best source of the inspirational message based on firsthand experience.
Yeah, yeah.
One example of that, Andy, is are you familiar with the medical technology company Medtronic?
Absolutely.
So for the past few years, and actually, this has been going on for about a decade now. Medtronic has held an annual holiday party where they invite patients whose lives have been changed by the company's medical technology products to come in and tell their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm struck by this because many companies would invite the CEO to stand up and give that speech.
Right.
And talk about all the good that the company's work is doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly it's not to say that employees don't hear from senior leaders,
yeah.
or that leaders don't do any inspiring, but I think the Medtronic practice is a powerful example of just how inspiring it can be to hear from that end user directly.
Yeah, Adam, I think this is a very, very helpful insight. And, you know, I know you've done some work with gratitude. You know, a couple of years back, I had a discussion with the CEO, and he essentially said, you know, I don't tell my people thank you. How's that for inspiration, right? You know, his concern was that if you thank people for doing their job, they get entitled, is basically where he's going with it. And you've done a lot of research into this whole gratitude thing. What are some important lessons we can learn about gratitude in about using gratitude in a productive way?
You know, I think the most important thing when we think about using gratitude productively is thinking about using gratitude doesn't work. Typically, you know, managers who actually try to bring gratitude and appreciation in as a strategy for motivating are typically pretty easy to see through.
Okay.
And, you know, what may even be well-intended as a message of gratitude and appreciation is easily interpreted cynically as a manipulative attempt to convince me to work harder.
What
turns out to be important is to find mechanisms that you can build in that allow for more natural expressions of gratitude. And so, you know, going back to the fundraisers and the scholarship students that we were talking about,
right,
the very act of just bringing scholarship students and fundraisers together creates a very authentic and genuine exchange of gratitude, because as soon as those scholarship students see the fundraisers, they're reminded of exactly where their scholarship came from and how much they appreciate it.
Right.
And, you know, their spontaneous response is typically to say, thank you.
Right. Yeah,
it's a little bit more difficult for a leader, especially a leader who doesn't have a strong relationship with employees,
mm-hmm,
to be able to deliver that thank you or that appreciative message in a way that seems very genuine and authentic. That's not to say that it can't be done, but I think it's important to structure employees' time, whether in the form of these kinds of meetings or whether in terms of how an office is arranged, so that when the task is actually done or when the impact of a product or service is made, there's a chance for the employees to receive that feedback so that it flows, again, directly and naturally from the course of doing the work.
Right, as opposed to some sort of forced or some sort of event where someone stands up and we want to thank you all in a generic or a wide span instead of some sort of natural interaction that was a consequence of what was done.
That's right.
Yeah, that's just, I was talking to a guy. There used to be the senior executive at his company that would visit the office maybe twice a year, and he'd come up to you and he'd go, "Hey, would you do me a favor?" And, you know, of course, everyone would say, "Well, sure." And then he goes, "Keep up the good work." and they said, "Well, that was kind of clever the first time, but the next time he visited the office, he'd come in and say, "Hey, would you do me a favor? Keep up the good work." You know, and it came off really quick as very plasticky, and, you know, this is just a catchphrase, not a true expression of gratitude. And as you're saying there, that is not going to achieve any sort of motivator engagement, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You know, all right, so let me put you on the spot here, because we got people listening. They're project managers, they're team leaders, they're department leaders, they might even be a purser flight attendant. And, you know, there are all kinds of challenges that they may have, either because they have positional power or they don't. And what are some specific things a leader could do to engage their teams despite the challenging business climate? You know, you've already shared some ideas. What else comes to mind?
You know, it's a really good question, and I'm not sure I have any of the answers to it.
Yeah.
But it's part of what makes, I think, research both worthwhile and exciting, but also incredibly challenging.
Right.
One of the trends that's becoming increasingly important in my experience, and also based on the available research evidence, is that more than ever before, at least in the U.S., employees care about bringing their identities and their values to work.
Mm.
And so we're seeing less and less segmentation.
Mm.
And less checking who you are at the door.
Yeah.
And more, okay, whatever my unique characteristics, hobbies, talents, values, interests are, I'd like to bring those into the workplace as much as I can.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that a series of colleagues and I have been studying is how do you actually support employees in their efforts to bring their identities and their values to work?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are a couple of ways that you could think about doing that very concretely. One is a technique developed by Andy Resnesky at Yale and Jane Dutton at Michigan with the help of Justin Berg, who's here at Wharton.
Hmm.
And what they've done is developed a tool for employees themselves or managers in coordination with employees to think about how to customize or modify their jobs.
Okay.
So they call it job crafting. And the idea is that you as an employee can be the architect of your own job. And as a manager, I can sit down with my employees and say, okay, what I want to do is support you in your efforts to find ways to tailor and modify or craft your job to make it more personally meaningful and to tie it more closely to your values and your identity. Mm. And so typically that starts with the process of identifying what your strengths, your motives, your interests are,
right.
And then trying to figure out ways in which, as an employee, or again, as a manager working with employee, we can juggle my set of tasks, my responsibilities, my time, and how I allocate it to try to better match up my job with what I'm looking for.
Right.
So that would be one example. Another example is in service work, one of the challenges we often encounter is it's very difficult to build rapport, especially with clients who may have negative expectations or customers who are angry and frustrated and impatient.
Right.
And Justin Berg and Dan Cable and I have been studying recently the idea that there are ways to bring your identity into that interaction that might help build rapport and smooth it out.
Hmm.
And one of the ways that we've studied very concretely is the idea that you can actually create your own job title. And the idea is to create a title that better signals than your formal professional title exactly who you are and what you bring to the table.
Okay.
And so we've recently finished a study in a hospital where it certainly interactions with patients, if you're a doctor or a nurse or a customer service representative, can be stressful at times.
Sure.
And we've asked employees at the hospital to identify basically what their core values and identities and unique characteristics are. Essentially, how do they add unique value in their work role that's different from how I might add it if I did their job?
Yeah.
And come up with a title that really reflects that they could use in a first interaction to build rapport.
Hmm.
And we found some surprising benefits of it. So we found reduced burnout and emotional exhaustion.
Really?
And as an example, I think this will very clearly illustrate how this kind of activity can function. We had a nurse who deals with children giving allergy shots. And you can imagine how these children walk into her office and how excited they are about seeing her.
Yeah.
And what she decided was that she really wanted to convey to them how important it is to her to make this an effortless and painless process.
Yeah.
And so she's actually started introducing herself when the children walk into the room with their parents in tow, or vice versa. She introduces herself by saying, "Hi, I'm Nurse Quickshot." And, you know, there's usually a little bit of laughter. It breaks
sure.
the ice.
Yeah.
But it also sends a very clear message about who she is and what she values
right.
in a way that helps her build a slightly less stressful relationship with the patients that she's trying to help.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not saying that creating job titles that are unique or creative or even in some cases silly is for everyone.
Right.
But I think it's an example of reframing your work in a way that very clearly brings your identity more directly into it. And I think that's a terrific way to think about engaging employees.
That's a great idea because, you know, when you feel like you have to check at the door who you are, over time, I'd have to think that sucks the life out of you. You know, it just it feels too big of a gap between who I am and what I actually do there. So, yeah, those are great ideas, Adam. I appreciate you sharing those. You know, for the listeners who want to take the next step in learning more about motivation, you know, what are some of your favorite recommended resources?
So, in terms of readings, there are a couple books that I would definitely recommend.
Mm-hmm.
One is a book that just came out by Chip Heath and Dan Heath called Switch.
Yep. Yep.
How to Change Things When Change is Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a wonderful combination of research evidence and practical examples around how small interventions can create pretty dramatic changes in behavior.
Yeah.
Another book that I've really loved recently is Dan Pink's new book, Drive.
Yes.
The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And, you know, not surprisingly, the kind of work that we've been talking about over the past half an hour dovetails very nicely with his view of purpose as an important motivator.
Absolutely, yeah.
And a third book that I might mention, especially for leaders and managers who are working with teams, would be Richard Hackman's book, Leading Teams.
Hmm.
And I think it's an excellent comprehensive overview of some very practical steps, again, research evidence supported, that can be used to make a team more effective.
Right. That's good. I appreciate it. I'm familiar with each one of those, and then we'll definitely put links in the show notes of this cast for those books. You know, knowing because of my research on you that you're a magician, you know, that's part of your identity and your values. So do you actually bring that into your work at all there, Adam?
I do at times.
Yeah.
So certainly there are times when I'm running sessions with students or with executives where I get asked to perform, and I have a hard time saying no.
Yeah.
But I also try to build certainly elements of surprise into a lot of my research and my teaching.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I have an appreciation for that nice balance between the academic rigor, but also the practicalness of what you do. So I look forward to following you in the years to come and introducing you to our listeners here in this cast. You know, Adam, I want to thank you for your time. It's a real pleasure to talk with you. For those who are listening, you want insights on how to more effectively lead your teams, I recommend you check out the show notes for all these recommendations. You know, Adam, I've enjoyed the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you for joining us on the People and Projects podcast.
Thank you, Andy. I look forward to our next communication.
You know, a proven way to help engage your team members is to invest in their development. You know, budgets don't always allow for you to send them away for training like, well, to Las Vegas. But that doesn't mean training has to be off for a year. You know, clearly you already know the benefits of podcasts. Some of the best free learning available these days comes from what you're doing right now, listening to casts such as the People and Projects podcast. Well, starting July of this year, we're launching premium subscriptions for our podcast. You and your teams will still have access to the free episodes, but we're going to go even further with the premium subscriptions to help you develop and engage your teams. Here's an example of how you could use our premium subscription. Have members of your team listen to an episode of the People and Projects podcast before a team meeting. And then prior to that meeting, you download the premium content for the episode. This will typically include questions that you could use to facilitate a discussion on the topic with your team members. In addition, there are usually links to additional resources, such as recommended books or articles, for follow-up learning as well. You know, beyond that, premium subscribers are automatically entered into drawings for books and other resources throughout the year. And as a special bonus, you get free admission to webinars that I lead throughout the year. Just visit our website at www.peopleandprojectspodcast.com to learn more and check back in July to sign up. Hey, and one last thing, would you take a moment to let a friend or colleague know about the People and Projects podcast? I'd love to pour into them as well to help them lead people and deliver projects. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the People and Projects podcast. Have yourself a great week.
Actually, I'm recording this off of a new computer, and so the settings for audio, I haven't had enough experience with it yet. Does it sound okay on my side in terms of volume?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It sounds just fine.
All right, great. I got to tell you, it's nice moving forward 5 years in technology. You know, when you get that new computer and it feels like it's really fast for about 6 months, and then it feels like...
Yeah, or 6 days.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, you are quite the Renaissance professor guy, you know. As I was doing a little research, I'm like, man, this is an amazing guy. He's an academic, he's worked in industry, and he's a magician. What's the deal, man? That's
it's great. Much more interesting on paper than in real life.
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, that's so when did you get into magic?
Actually, when I was about 12.
Really?
It's been a while, yeah. I was, I think it was a combination of, I babysat for some kids who were, I don't want to say that they were ADD.
Right, yeah, but yeah.
they had short attention spans, and when they got into magic 1 week, and I found that they were really well behaved when I performed tricks, and so I started learning tricks, and, you know, every week they would be very attentive, so I then built up some skills and realized as a socially awkward middle schooler, it was a pretty good way to connect with people.
Yeah, yeah, that's
performing.
Cool.
And I think I will probably sound like a social scientist. Let me say that differently, actually.
Yeah, no problem.
Is it okay to edit as we
Absolutely.
Go?
Absolutely.
Great.
Adam, we've got some productivity that... All right, that's a wrap. Well done. Guys,
thanks.
You know, I got to tell you, you know, there's sometimes I'll do an interview and I think, all right, that's kind of interesting. I've heard all that before. But, you know, I think this this whole leading with meaning is a is something that is getting some press out there, but I think there's still some room to learn more there.
I think so, too. I think there's huge opportunity.
Yeah.